But it's for its own benefit for Syria to be divided.
I don't think it's a benefit for Syria to be divided. It's what regional powers want. That Turkey needs part of it. Israel needs part of it. And that's not even a benefit for the Syrian people. For the Syrian people, most important interest is to have the whole of Syria liberated. That's not what's happening today. Every day that passes on, parts of Syria are occupied, mm-hmm. in the south or in the north. It doesn't matter, but parts of Syria are missing. And these parts of Syria are very important to the country on the economic level and on the political level. And that's what the Syrians are paying the price to do so. And let's see how Israel reacted to the Druze issue.
It left, they are the protector of the Druze.
Yes,
now.
It left yesterday I saw a number, more than 750 people were killed in the south of Syria. And this is why Israel is protecting them. So no one believes today that Israel really is protecting anyone. Everyone today knows that.
For the first time I've heard that Israel is trying to protect any minority in any country. However, wouldn't this fact impact the relationships or the countries that Israel has normalized with, like, for example, Egypt? Well, isn't that a threat to other countries who has already been normalizing with Israel?
Yes, it's not a threat for countries that have been normalizing. It's a threat for everyone in the region. Yes, for everyone in the region. First of all, it's the main threat is for the countries that are on the borders with Palestine. We're speaking about Jordan, Egypt, Lebanon, and Syria, because what's happening in Syria today may happen in any country of these four countries. So they feel threatened. Number two, all other regional powers also feel threatened. Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, Turkey, because they feel that now Israel is moving on towards the goal of being the hegemonic power in the region, which they have no interest
in. At times where the United States is still speaking about Abraham Accords, and obviously the Israelis are on another dimension
exactly.
Maybe that will actually cause some kind of diffusion between the two. Do you agree to that?
Yes.
Because there are two different perspectives here.
Yes, I agree to that, but you have to see which perspective will win.
Okay.
The American one, which depends on diplomacy, or the Israeli one, which depends on forcing others to normalize.
Okay, the stalemate in the ceasefire negotiations in the Gaza Strip was addressed by the Israeli media, which considers that there are two unresolved issues that are the subject of discussion with the mediators, the Murat Corridor and the so-called humanitarian city. Obviously, the two disputed points in the negotiations are the Murat Corridor and the so-called humanitarian city inside Rafah specifically. Do you think there is a possibility of resolving them in preparation for concluding the deal?
Well, to be honest, I don't think that in this round of negotiation there will be ability to conclude the deal, because it's obvious that still Hamas and Israel diverge a lot on several points, especially the point about how Israel wants to continue being inside of Gaza. And they want to continue to be there as a part of continuing of the occupation of Gaza, destroying the resistance and everything. So I think the divergence is still a lot between the two parties, so I don't think the current round will lead to a deal. At the same point,
but what happened here to the American pressure for this deal to take place?
You know,
as if retaliated.
Yes, we have been having 16 rounds.
Yes,
we have been having 16 rounds of negotiations between Israel and Hamas. In the 16 rounds, if you follow up with the official American statements before every round, most of the American official statements say that we are near to reaching an agreement. We have been
very close.
We are very close to reaching the agreement. So it's always what the Americans said. They are always saying we are pressuring Israel, we want to reach an agreement. We are near that. We are close to reaching it, and then they blame Hamas. But we,
Trump, he speaks unrealistically about it.
Exactly, but the main problem is that Israel is not able to be, or isn't convinced that it has to leave Gaza. And that's mainly because of its colonial history. Israel wants to be occupying Gaza, and it doesn't feel now that it's pressured to the level that it has to leave Gaza.
Yeah.
I think that every day passes on, the military pressure on Israel, the diplomatic, the political one, will increase until they are convinced to reach an agreement.
Okay. We remain with the negotiations, the two issues, the Murat Corridor and the so-called humanitarian city. A former Israeli officer told Hebrew media that these two matters are political and their proposal is intended to serve Netanyahu, Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. To what extent do you see that the issue of the Murat Corridor and the humanitarian city in Rafah pose a real threat to occupation soldiers who are committing suicide?
Yes, well, I think that you can find the answer in Khan Yunis. You can find the answer in every city inside of Gaza today, where Israeli soldiers are found and already paying the price, and they are already being targeted by the Palestinian resistance. So it's not about expectations, it's about what we're seeing today. So it's obvious today that, yes, Israel can move inside of Gaza. It's obvious also today that Israel can't stay inside stable points inside of Gaza, because there will be a price. And it's obvious that the resistance inside of Gaza, Hamas, is still strong. It still has capabilities, and it can still inflict damage to the Israeli army. And that's the main thing today to understand, is that for almost 2 years of war between Israel and several countries and parties in the region, till now, no strategic goal achieved by Israel. We still have a very strong resistance inside of Gaza, which is leading to giving them the ability to say no in negotiations. If they weren't this strong, then Israel would have
instead been the number of soldiers being killed is on the rise.
Exactly.
Israeli soldiers.
Because every day that passes on, the resistance will adapt more to the type of war they are facing, number one. And number two, it's because Israel is facing a resistance. So if one person is still alive and has weapons, he will fight. So and let's not forget that Palestinians are the one who own the land. So they will never leave their lands and give it to Israel. So all the situation is not with the benefit of Israel, and we are seeing them today. So I think the Morak corridor, the humanitarian city, is not applicable. And the answer for that you can find in Khan Yunis, in Rafah, and many other cities inside of Gaza, where Israeli soldiers are being killed and are being targeted by the Palestinian resistance.
Mm-hmm. And when actually the Israeli side insist on the Morak corridor and on the humanitarian city in Rafah, doesn't that tell us that they're putting their soldiers at very high risk? And wouldn't that damage the relationship between the army and the political side?
Well, I do believe that the relationship is already damaged, but the army at the end of the road has to abide by the rules.
Mistrust.
Yes, of course there is mistrust. Of course, they don't believe that Netanyahu is following Israel's interests. Of course, the army is too tired. Of course, the army is paying a huge price for staying in war for almost 2 years. And this is what they have been saying to Netanyahu for the past several months. But at the end of the road, Netanyahu is forcing others to follow by what he views best, and that's what's mainly inflicting affecting the trust between him and other people inside
of Israel. In addition to threats from some far-right ministers to withdraw from the Israeli government if a ceasefire agreement is reached, there were also threats from ministers of the religious parties to resign from Netanyahu's government if the Haredi draft crisis is not resolved. To what extent do you think that there is a real possibility for the Shas party members, as we highlighted in this report, has been highlighted in the report, to resign from the government if members of the United Torah Judaism party resign over the Haredi draft crisis?
Well, I think, yes, Israel faces a huge problem today regarding the Haredi crisis. And it's more deep than only the Haredi crisis. It's about trust between Netanyahu and different factions inside of Israel. So it's about between him and the liberals, between him and the Haredi, between him and the army, between him and other political parties. So there is really a political division inside of Israel, which is escalating throughout time. And this may lead nearly to a point where, yes, Chas may resign and other political parties may resign. And it's ironic that, who are the Haredis? They are the most religious people inside of Israel. Okay. So the most religious people inside of Israel are being divided because of what? Because they don't believe that the army is a suitable place for them to be inside. They don't believe in defending Israel. They believe that the others should defend Israel, not them. These are the most religious people inside of Israel that don't believe that they should take part in defending Israel. And they also promote that the army is not suitable for religious people. So this is how much divided Israel is today.
Okay, and how would that develop in the coming days if this division continues?
Well, I always,
because obviously they are, every now and then when we get close to a ceasefire, they threaten to
Yes, they used to threaten
to give up.
They used to threaten that
to
before.
To retire. Yes.
They used to threaten that before, based on how they view the war. Now they feel that they are threatened. It's not about soldiers being threatened. It's not about Israel's interests. It's about their own interests. That's why I always say Israel in the future. Everyone is writing. Everyone is speaking about it facing more strategic failures. One of them is this division.
Okay, the Israeli commentator actually mentions a deadline of just 2 days for religious parties to withdraw from the government if Netanyahu does not find a solution to the Haredi draft issue. Do you think that is possible?
Yes, I do think that's possible, because they won't give Netanyahu the chance to negotiate with them, try to pass the laws he is trying to pass, that they think that they affect them negatively. Mm-hmm. So at the point where they find that there is no deal that can be achieved, and Netanyahu is insisting on continuing with the Haredi project,
what would happen then to Netanyahu's government?
Well, it depends on how much people resign from the government, and it depends on how much he can convince other parties to fill the blank place inside of the government. So I think if the Haredi do resign, then Netanyahu will surely have a huge problem inside the cabinet, and I think that he will then go towards early elections. But you know, the problem inside of Israel is, even today,
yes, a lot are speaking about early elections and how he's very interested in that.
Yes, because all the surveys show that if early elections happen today, then he will return as being the prime minister of Israel. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem with Netanyahu is, even if he returned being prime minister, and I think that early elections is one of the most possible scenarios today, the problem is that his coalition won't be stable. It's always him with others, and he needs others for the whole coalition to form a cabinet. Mm-hmm. And his views with the other parties' views are diverging a lot, with the Haredis, with the liberals, with the opposition parties, and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's always Israel's political parties, political cabinet, will always be divided, and that's the most important thing to concentrate on.
Okay. Israeli social media reacted to the rising death toll among the occupation soldiers in the Gaza Strip and strongly criticized the Netanyahu government's attempts to appease the Haredim by exempting them from military service. Here are some of the comments.
Sagit Abu: in the Knesset, we knew about the deaths of the three soldiers in Gaza. Nevertheless, we witnessed the shameless begging by the governing coalition toward the Haredim to stay in the government after promising not to pass the Haredi draft law for the army. Yuzi Shoham: if opposition leaders come to power, they'll give the Haredim every budget they want in exchange for votes. No one will object then, because drafting the Haredim was never the opposition's goal. The goal has always been, and still is, to bring down the coalition. Hantri Stanit: while the country bleeds, the governing coalition plays its political game. That is how this government operates.
Dr. Mohammed Souaidan, academic and writer in international affairs, thank you very much for joining us in this episode.
Life as you know, you reap what you sow, and when you do good, Allah will protect you and stop you falling down. Allah, we surrender, 'cause he knows all, no compromise. Hears your laugh and feels your cry, he is there all the time. Make dua, praise Allah, our iman will grow, inshallah. Oh,
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRAB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. Wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and everything is just fine with you. And this is Asma. With me, I have two very dear guests, Sister Nahid and Sister Nasreen. Assalamu alaikum to both of you and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam. It's an honor to be with you and our very dear listeners.
Sister Nasreen.
Assalamu alaikum to all of you. Sorry, my voice sounds bad. I have allergies.
No, that's all okay. We know that the weather, if the audience knew what kind of a weather we're suffering from right now these days, then they would have never blamed you for this. So thank you for coming, even though you're suffering from your allergy. But your presence in the studio would do too much of great company to us. So, as the introduction of the program usually goes this way, that you have to give us a very brief introduction of yourself. So please, Sister Nahid.
I'm a teacher. It's been like 10 years that I've been teaching English, and it's been almost some years that I'm conducting the Islamic researches, and I'm so happy to be with you.
Thank you very much for coming.
Actually, I have studied English literature, and after that, I went to Hausa to study some Islamic
concepts.
Yeah.
Thank you, both of you, for coming here and for being a part of today's episode. I wish we could have a great discussion so that it would give the audience a sort of a food for their thought. Well, previously in Back to Reality, we're talking about aestheticism. I was actually so much interested in the discussion, and I think time was not enough for us to dissect all the details. So I think that would be so fruitful if we continue talking about aestheticism and austerity and what today's world call it as minimalism and all the branches. Like, let's get us straight into it. There are many movies and many TV series and many people in the media talking about Buddhism. And what is so prominent in Buddhism is this leading a simple life. And then people would take that into very extreme corners of simplicity so that you would not enjoy even having a very delicious food. Like, what you are going to ignore is all the pleasures of life. And this is not an interesting thing. So let's talk about the different versions of this austerity that we see in today's world and the side effects of these austerity. Look, in nowadays we have two sides. One side wishes to go for a luxurious life, and the other side, they think that, no, everything is in simplicity. Too simple.
Yeah, and you know, whenever I think of these extremists, what I come up with is that this is not a way of just making life better. It's an escape, you know. Mm-hmm. They're escaping from responsibility. They're escaping from working hard, probably. Like, what else? What can be the reason behind giving up on the whole life and just going, sitting at a corner, devoting your time to the so-called pray, so-called hard practices?
Meditation.
I believe that this kind of asceticism is what is rooted in those people just escaping from the reality, from life. I do not want to work hard to achieve things that will make my life easier. So what's better than just finding an excuse that, okay, I'm devoting myself to God, I'm just practicing some hard stuff, and I'm living a so-called simplified life.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some others, like one of the reasons would be this, that they wish to have an excuse to escape from the responsibilities of life. But then another thing is meaning. Maybe some people in search of meaning, they get into this track, but this track is not taking them to a very good direction.
You know, the intent might be right, but the way they are practicing it can be challenging.
Yeah, the means are not correct.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. In Islam, we say, okay, you can detach yourself from worldly pleasure. in order to, you know, focus on the spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm.
So this is fine, I think. But when you go out of the limits, and then I think they hurt themselves.
So when you say this, when you say that in Islam, we say that we have to distract ourselves from worldly pleasure. Mm-hmm. So there might be people who would take it to the extreme.
Exactly.
So that would lead to the same way.
That is a problem, yes. You know,
but this is not a perfect reading of what the Prophet has said.
Mm-hmm. No. Actually, our Ahlul Bayt never, even our Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, they never said so. I told you, and I always focus on this word, balance. In everything, you need to have balance. I remember yesterday I saw a woman, she went to Karbala. It's funny a little bit. And then she came back from Karbala and then she said, okay, I'm not going to go to bazaar anywhere. I'm not going to go to shop anywhere. I'm not going to go do this. I told her why. She said, because of Imam Hussein and Ahlul Bayt, I won't do this. I told her, no, you're ruining your life. You need these things. You have to fulfill your basic needs.
This
of course
is part
you need
of your
them.
Life.
It's a part of your life. Yes, yeah. You need that sometimes. But they want you to not to devote yourself just on these things. I mean, just going out, shop, hang, you know, here, being out and about, and do such a thing. No, you have to have a balance in your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go to Holy Shrine, do your prayer, do your du'as. And on the other side, focus on your life too.
And
this is something that Ahlul Bayt did, you know. They most of them were, you know, farmers, as you know. So they were working, and the other side, you know, there's another point. Actually, maybe it's a little bit terrifying if I say that. Do you think that Ahlul Bayt needed to work at all? Do you think that they needed, for example, like Lady Maryam, just they brought her food and when while she was praying, you know, because we say they, Ahlul Bayt all are the whole, you know, na'ma. I mean, the rewards from Allah. They have everything.
Yeah, you mean that if
but
God wishes,
yeah,
he would have given them everything,
yes,
without them even working.
Because, you know, this time that I am here, that I'm breathing, I'm eating, whatever I'm doing, it's again because of the Imam Zaman's presence. So see how much valuable the presence, this people's presence values.
Is a blessing in itself.
Exactly. It's a huge blessing for all of us. So a person who has this kind of blessing to all of people, he is working too. Because he wants to teach me.
Though
working
he could have
is a part
it the
of
other
your
way.
Life. Yes. They could do that. Yeah. They could just be on one corner, mm-hmm, and do their praying and then the blessing and whatever they wanted to, you know, come to them.
Yeah, right.
But they didn't prefer this. They wanted to show us working is a part of your life, going out, buying things, and on the other side, having Allah in your mind in whatever you do, in every single step that you're taking. So this is the most important thing that we have.
So having worldly pleasure, working, being engaged in life,
yeah,
as if life is eternal forever, in mm-hmm the way Imam Ali alayhi salam
exactly
says it. Work for your life as if it's not going to end forever. And work for your hereafter as if you're going to die tomorrow.
Exactly.
So there must be a balance. Listening to Back to Reality, I'm Asma, your host. Sister Nahid and Sister Nasreen are in here, and I'm quite enjoying this discussion. Well, we came to this conclusion at the very beginning of today's episode that there is no incongruity between having worldly pleasures and everything that God has provided you with, and having this mentality that, okay, life is going to end one day and I have to work for my hereafter as well.
Yeah, and you know, one question. Once I was talking to one of those people who totally believed in the ascetic behavior, and he was actually practicing it. He was an old man. And I asked him, why are you practicing this? Why are you bothering yourself? Why are you staying in an isolated place far from the city? And his answer was both strange and thought-provoking. His answer was that I'm doing this because of the self-care and the self-growth. I want myself to improve. I'm one person. I have just one life. I want to devote it to myself. So he had this idea that when he's practicing this hard practices and he's isolating himself, he's hurting himself in some ways, though he didn't believe in hurting. Like, he believed that what he was doing was something helpful.
For his benefit.
Yeah, was something that could help him as one person to go toward the growth and to improve. So he had this idea that when I'm practicing this, I am going for the self-care. And in this word, we hear these keywords a lot, like self-care, self-betterment, think of yourself.
Improvement,
you are the center of the
evolvement,
world. Yeah. So this idea is also here, that those people might think that they are just going for the betterment of themselves as one person.
You know, what I usually think is that usually world works like this, that when a group of people get something to an extreme, like when the world gets into too much of materialism, then there are a group of people who would act as the opposite side. They would search for the meaning of life, and then they would fall into the trap of asceticism or austerity or living a simple life, because it is a reaction to the actions of materialism. When they see too much of hustles and bustles in this world, like getting engaged with too much of everything that's related to money, everything that's related to the body, everything that's related to all the worldly pleasures and materials, they see this and they figure out that, okay, this is not the purpose of life. Maybe if I go into this direction and live a simple life, then I would get into the meaning of life.
Yeah.
But this is not the whole idea. You must have interaction. In the case of the person you just brought up his example,
yeah.
I guess the thing that is lacking and missing in his life is the interaction. Like,
yeah.
Even Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam has always encouraged us to have interaction with other people, because part of your responsibility is for your neighbors, for your friends, for your society, generally speaking.
Yeah, and that's why Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions, be moderate in seeking livelihood, for the seeker of what is ordained will surely get it, while the seeker of excess may never reach it. Once
yeah.
you go for the extremes, you will never reach it.
Exactly. That's a problem for some people who, you know, just want to have more wealth and wealth
yeah.
and wealth. It never stops.
Yeah.
And even for these people, I think they never are satisfied.
Yeah,
right. That's why maybe some of
mm-hmm.
them, you know, kill themselves in the
yeah.
end, and they feel tired because they say, okay,
yes,
how
exactly.
so
common.
But the
right
same
now.
Thing might happen for these people who seek that simple life, that is going to the extreme. Because, you know, if even in the movies they show that, like, someone under the pretext of getting to find the meaning of life gets to detach themselves from people, and then what happens is isolation, detachment, and then maybe depression, and then we're not actually complete human beings. Like, we might fall into the trap of not even realizing what's the meaning of life. That's why at the end of that life we might feel, okay, was it all like this?
Yeah.
I'm not even enjoying my food. I'm not enjoying a company of anyone. I'm not enjoying sleeping in a bed that is just moderate. I'm not talking about luxurious life. Just imposing too much of difficulties on myself
yeah,
is not what God has asked me to do.
Exactly. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, in his supplications, asks Allah for a livelihood that helps him obey divine commands, neither excessive to the point of arrogance, nor insufficient to the cause of hardship. So this is something, you know, in Ahlul Bayt's application and dua, you can see this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just check the Ahlul Bayt's life, you can see, or you can just have a model, a live model. Okay, I can do this, I can do that. So they don't want us to go to out of extremes. And there's another dua from Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He says, "Oh Allah, I seek refuge in you from poverty and disbelief." So he is placing both at a serious level of concern.
So we're human beings, we've got needs, and God has asked us to search for the meaning of life and at the same time to enjoy life. So we're not supposed to deprive ourselves from all the worldly, materialistic pleasures, as well as the spiritual growth. So thank you very much for staying with us. This was all for today. Until another episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Nasir Khosrow Street is the oldest street in Tehran. It extends from Imam Khomeini Square to 15 Khordad Street in Tehran's Bazaar District. Along the way are some of the most iconic buildings and places of the capital, such as Darul Funun School, Saray Roshan, Shamsul Emare Building, and Marvi Alley.
Nasir Khosrow is more than just a street. You just need to walk from one end to another in order to travel to the past without even leaving the present. Join me in this historic journey.
The
construction of Nasir Khosrow Street dates back to 1906. Before that date, the street was part of a large ditch in this area. After the construction of new trenches, they filled the ditch and it became Nasiriyye Street, because it was built by the order of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar.
To know the central part of a city is to visit its historical places. Darul Funun School, the first modern school of Iran, which was founded in 1851 by Mirza Taqi Khan Amir Kabir.
Muhammad Taqi Amir Nizam, known as Amir Kabir, was the prime minister of Iran during the reign of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar. During his time, Amir Kabir exercised administrative programs, cultural and economic reforms for the country. And certainly, his most important work was the foundation of Darul Funun. Darul Funun School played a major role in the process of modernization of Iran. We continue our journey on the road to the south. It is interesting that the first pharmacy, the first printing press, and the first school of Iran were all in this street. In its central section, most buildings date back to the early 20th century, and some of these historical buildings have been preserved.
Almost towards the middle of the Nasir Khosrow Street, Saray Roshan rises as a historical symbol of this area, one of the first commercial buildings of the capital city. Its unique style is inspired by Gothic architecture.
Only 2 to 3 minutes walk from Saray Roshan, we find another unique building, which is called Shamsul Emare.
In this street, you can enjoy the architecture of a building called Shamsul Emare, or the Edifice of the Sun. Shamsul Emare is one of the most impressive structures of the Gulistan Palace, which was built around 150 years ago by the order of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar. I'm sure he had a perfect view of the city of Tehran when he was standing up there.
Shamsul Emare is the first five-story building in the capital, and at the time was considered the tallest building in Tehran. The building combines traditional Iranian architecture with European one. The facade of this building is decorated with bricks and colorful tiles with some beautiful paintings.
Famous Marvi Alley is located right across the street to Shamsul Emare building. Here you can find many different shops and boutiques for all different tastes and budgets. This part of the market attracts tourists and customers from different socioeconomic levels.
Marvi School is located in the same alley, and it is one of the oldest seminaries in Iran. This school was built almost about 200 years ago. The Marvi School is a 4,500 square meters space and has a capacity for about 200 students. The schoolyard is a square garden and it includes several rooms, a library consisting of old books, and a small pond in the middle. Before I say goodbye to this street, I'm going to try some street food here because Tehran's Bazaar district is famous for its tasty foods. I was told that the falafel sandwich of this area is just awesome. And indeed it is, so I hope you get a chance to try it too. Shahriyar Azimi for Iran. We'll be right back.
megacity with a population of around 13 million people. It's a modern city with a modern architecture. Flats and high-rise buildings rule the whole city. From the outside, it's quite dense and all the houses look the same. But from the inside, well, let's go and see what makes the architecture of some of the buildings quite different from the rest. Some of the architects in the country, building a structure is not just about keeping up with the latest architectural trends. It's more about building a house that adapts with the functional needs of its users. Let's take a look at this one.
This is the Sharifiha House, a flexible structure with three turning boxes or rooms that can be rotated 90 degrees to open up the terrace during hot summers and turned back to a horizontal position to keep the house warmer during the cold, snowy winters. Ali Taghabouni is the mastermind behind the creation. He was inspired by the country's traditional houses, which offered both a winter and a summer living room for the residents.
We're going to see another house. It's basically a childhood dream come true, an eco-friendly house that will certainly blow your mind away.
A portable house made from wood and built in just 3 days, 72 pieces to be precise. 36 parts for the roof and 36 for the body, all fastened with screws. It's not one of the usual houses that you see each day. It's a house that connects you to nature and makes you feel calm and restful, undisturbed from the outside world. Abbas Iftikhari is the architect of this house, who has been living here with his family ever since it was built. He has studied industrial design, restoration of historic monuments and interior design, and he has been teaching them all in the university for 18 years. Mr. Iftikhari told me that wood is a naturally grown and engineered material which contributes to an overall removal of greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. At the same time, it's structurally strong and acts as a natural insulator due to the air pockets within its cellular structure. The family's sun clock was also interesting to see. Mr. Iftikhari explained to me that as the sun moves across the sky, the shadow aligns with different hour lines which are marked on the dial to indicate the time of the day. Every nook and corner of the house was also filled with different wooden sculptures, and as we understood, Abbas Iftikhari has a hand in sculpting too.
It's a dreamy experience, rubbing your hands on the different shapes of wood and smelling the woody fragrance and looking at the colorful, delicate veins as they each tell you their life story.
We live in a world constantly surrounded by technology. Maybe it's about time we got in touch with Mother Nature, becoming environmentally aware and reconnecting with the energy of the universe. Hoda Lezgi for Iran.
each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. An FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Good evening to all our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Very nice to have you with us. We'll start this hour's programs with our news bulletin that will be followed by today's special daily mix format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. Our radio productions feature will be next. That will be followed by leaders' speech presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. And our final program this hour is Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them all, along with a brief explanation about the hadith. Stay with us for this hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran has reiterated the European Union and European Troika no legal ground to trigger a snapback mechanism of the JCPOA, thus a joint comprehensive plan of action. Dozens of Palestinians have been killed in fresh Israeli attacks on Gaza since dawn Tuesday. And Yemen carries out yet another anti-Israel operation targeting Ben Gurion Airport with a hypersonic ballistic missile. Hello, everyone, and welcome to World News. Our top story, Iran has reiterated the European Union and European Troika no legal ground to trigger a snapback mechanism of the JCPOA, that's a joint comprehensive plan of action. Deputy Foreign Minister Kazem Gharibabadi said the activation of such a mechanism is illegal, adding the JCPOA is not in effect currently, adding the European parties to the deal did not remain committed to it after U.S. withdrawal. Gharibabadi noted the Western parties to the JCPOA thus cannot blame Iran for failing to abide by the JCPOA commitments when they themselves have failed to do so. The Deputy Foreign Minister said the Iranian delegation will assert its position firmly during an upcoming meeting with representatives from the UK, France, and Germany on Friday in Turkey's Istanbul. Talks in the Turkish city are set to revolve around Tehran's nuclear program. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister says the country has no plan to abandon its nuclear program, including uranium enrichment, despite recent military aggression by the U.S. and regional proxy, Israel.
We cannot give up our enrichment because it is an achievement of our own scientists. And now, more than that, it is a question of national pride.
Abbas Araghchi made the remarks in an interview with Fox News. Regarding negotiations with the U.S., Araghchi said Tehran is open to talks but has no plan for direct negotiations for the time being. He noted if Washington is coming for a win-win solution, Tehran is ready to engage. The top diplomat noted that Iran, though, is ready to do any confidence-building measure needed to prove that its nuclear program is in fact peaceful in exchange for lifting of U.S. sanctions. Araghchi, however, stressed any future nuclear deal, though, should contain the right to enrichment. As part of ongoing memorials held across the country for Iranians who were martyred in recent Israeli aggression, a ceremony has been held in Tehran to honor the great sacrifices made by those lost in Iran's northern province of Gilan. Our correspondent, Mariam Azarche, has your story.
A surprise appearance that underscores the significance of the ceremony. President Masoud Pezeshkian arrived unannounced to pay his respects at the solemn ceremony in Tehran to honor the martyrs of Iran's northern Gilan province. those who, while their country was under attack, made the honorable choice to risk their lives in its defense.
My son was almost 31 years old and was fighting on the front lines. He was on leave with his family when he was called in at 3 a.m. He then left his wife and kids in his father-in-law's care. Mohammad Reza has an 8-year-old daughter and a 2-month-old baby girl whom he didn't even get to kiss goodbye. He defended the country for a few days and was then martyred.
In Iran, the spirit of sacrifice extends far beyond the battlefield. Over the past 2 decades, more than 20 pioneering Iranian scientists have been assassinated in attacks by the Israeli regime. Among the most recent, Mohammad Reza Sadiqi Saber martyred alongside 11 family members in a targeted strike. Yet, though giving up one's life is the ultimate sacrifice, outliving one's loved ones is a sacrifice of its own, especially for those who have kids to raise.
Misak is only 9 and he was so close to his big brother. We haven't talked about it much yet, but he knows that his brother is with God now.
My husband loved us so much and he often told us that. He also often tried to talk to us and prepare us for his martyrdom. The day before he was martyred, he told me over the phone about the importance of living a martyr's life. I have nothing more to say other than we're ready to give our lives for our leader, and I hope that my children will follow in my husband's path.
These sacrifices are deeply appreciated by Iran's leader, officials, and the nation as a whole. Yet the families say the only reward they seek is the honor of martyrdom for the greater good, for national sovereignty, and for territorial integrity for Iran.
The sacrifice